Hey, gang. Welcome. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. I'm Patrick Slattery. You can find some of what I do at nationalbugle.com. I like to get those names out there at the beginning of the show. I will take calls today. The number here at RBN is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. I don't know if we got some construction going on outside. I don't know if you hear the jackhammers, but, well, that's just the way it works sometimes. A day or two ago, maybe it was when I was on with Mark Collette, I brought up a skit from Saturday Night Live with Eddie Murphy. I think it was on this show. And a show where he puts on a bunch of white makeup and goes out. And all the white people are very nice to each other when there's no black people around. You know something? So today I go to YouTube for something, and all of a sudden that skit was there as like the top recommendation for me. Now, I had not done any Google search for it, so I have to say it's very, very creepy that simply having talked about it on a radio show means that the next time I look at YouTube, all of a sudden they're recommending it for me. That is very, very creepy. Anyway, it's still creepy or not, let's check out that skit. So, because there's something a little bit interesting about it. Eddie Murphy, so he wants to see what's going on with white people. He goes into a makeup artist's room, and the makeup artists are black, and they put a lot of white makeup on him, put a wig on him. You know, he still looks like a black guy with a lot of makeup and a wig, because he's got the African nose. But be that as it may, if just suspend disbelief, he comes out and he's dressed in a three-piece suit and he's walking through New York. And the first thing he does is he walks into a newspaper shop. You know, what would you call it? A news shop. There's magazines, there's newspapers, and he goes over, picks up a newspaper, plops it on the desk.
What are you doing?
I'm buying this newspaper.
That's all right. There's nobody around. Go ahead, take it. Take it. Go ahead, take it. Yeah, take it.
So he looks confused, kind of waddles towards the door, because white people don't walk, they waddle.
Slowly I began to realize that when white people are alone, they give things to each other for free.
All right, so they give things to each other for free. He's confused. Now he's stepping on a bus. He gets on a bus and sitting down. There's a lot of white people on this bus. The New York bus, it's got a lot of white people on it.
There was only one other black man on the bus.
But that black man just rang the bell and he's about to get off.
He got off on 45th Street.
Now that the black guy's off the bus, the driver looks around, gives everybody the cue, turns on the music. It's cabaret. Life is a cabaret. There's some white guy who is clapping out of time with no rhythm whatsoever. A girl in I guess what we'd call it, a cocktail outfit, and handing out drinks, and people are dancing in a very white way.
Much more serious than I'd ever imagined.
But they're being nice to each other. Now he walks into a bank. There is a black man behind the desk. He's a loan officer.
$1,000 from my bank. But you have no collateral. You have no credit. You don't even have any ID. Is that correct?
That's right.
Mr. White, I'm sorry. This is not a charity. This is a business.
Harry, why don't you take your break now? I'll take care of Mr. White.
So the bank manager comes in. He is white, and he's having the black loan officer take his break.
That was a close one, wasn't it? We don't have to bother with these formalities, do we, Mr. White?
What a silly Negro.
Just take what you want, Mr. White. Pay us back any time, or don't. We don't care.
Okay. So that's the bank manager brings out a little safe box, and there's loads of cash in it, and let's the white Eddie Murphy take as much as he wants. You can pay it back anytime, or don't pay it back. We don't care. And they're laughing. Then, you know, it switches back to Eddie Murphy, and he's in the makeup room, and there's some black people, and they're having makeup applied to them, and he's just warning people that, well, I've got a lot of friends, and we've got a lot of makeup, so watch out. We're watching you. Well, what I think this is interesting, this was from December 1984. That's when this first broadcast, 1984. That's 34 years ago. 34 years ago, it is only 19 years after the immigration law, the 1965 Immigration Act passed. So it's about one third of the way along this demographic transformation that we've been undergoing for the past 53 years. It's about a third of the way along. At the starting point, America was about 88% white. Now it's about 62%. So you can figure, well, at the time that this was made, maybe America was about 80% white. It was still about 80% white. Probably a little more, because I think there's been an acceleration of this of the demographic changes. So, you know, it was mostly white, more than 80% white, maybe 12% black. The skit that Eddie Murphy did, it's not portraying whites as somehow exploiting blacks. It doesn't show blacks as being exploited, as being victimized in order for whites to be able to dance to cabaret on a city bus, or to give each other money at a bank, or give each other newspapers for free. It just says that white people do this. When blacks aren't around, white people do this. And one way of reading this, and I'm sure this is not Eddie Murphy's intention, but if it wasn't for black people being around, white people would have a high-trust society where a lot of formalities wouldn't be necessary, because you could expect somebody to pay you back, that they would be very nice to each other. You know, that is one way of reading what he said. Now, of course, economically, that's not the case. Even if there weren't black people around, the banks wouldn't be giving out money and saying pay back whenever. But the fact of the matter is that we have lost a lot by going from a largely homogeneous, with an asterisk, society, to one that is so multicultural. And I know I've mentioned it before on this show. There's Robert Putnam, the Harvard professor, did a study, wrote a book called Bowling Alone. And it was about the impact of multiculturalism on trust in the society. And Putnam, being a liberal, he was expecting to find a lot of benefits from multiculturalism. But he's honest enough that when he did his study, he found that not only does multiculturalism, does increased diversity of race, religion, ethnicity, not only does it decrease trust overall within societies, Does it decrease social interactions within the society as a whole? But it also decreases trust within groups within the society, so that it's not as if with an increase in diversity, well, okay, you have less trust between the groups, but within the groups, say within white people, it's not as if white people are turning in on themselves and being particularly nice to each other. No, within groups, within whites, presumably within blacks, you're getting a decrease in trust between individuals, even within the same group. He had a lot of measures of what he did, and his name's Robert Putnam. You can look at this article. I think it's interesting, and you know, it's not just white people who have been impacted, and you know, it was Eddie Murphy, this black comedian, who did this skit. And I'm not going to try to read into his motives or whatnot, but you think of the what used to be, not anymore, but what used to be the second biggest ethnic group in the United States, racial group, which were blacks. And you look at their situation now compared to, say, 1960, before the civil rights legislation, before Brown versus Board of the Education actually really took effect. I mean, I guess that was from, what, 54, 55, but desegregation had not gone very far by 1960. So you go back to, say, 1960, and, well, you could say there have been certain advances made. I mean, you've got Barack Obama and Oprah Winfrey. Would you have had a black president at that time? You know, not very likely. In 1960, didn't have any black senators. You hadn't had any black senators since the Reconstruction era. You had, what was the name? Something Clayton Powell, who was a congressman from Harlem. He had been a congressman from Harlem in the 30s and 40s. By 1960, I don't know how many blacks you had in Congress. Not very many. But, you know, today when we're talking about black millionaires, black politicians, we're talking about a tiny handful of people. So they have gained this handful of visible elites, and they've also gained, not necessarily for the same reasons, but partly, you think of the black athletes. And you think of, well, there had always been black musicians. I'm sure that Louis Armstrong did fairly well, you know, did well as... probably wasn't too much of a difference in the way he did as opposed to his white counterparts, like, you know, Glenn Miller or so. They were probably all exploited by the Jews, who even back in the early part of the century ran the music industry. But you've got this, you do have this black aristocracy now, which you had to a much lesser extent back then, and they're doing very well. But they represent a tiny fraction of 1% of the black population. And what's going on with the rest of the black population? And you look in terms of their family. The out-of-wedlock birth rate for blacks is about three-quarters. It's about 75%. It's been plunging. There's, you know, marriage is I won't quite say almost non-existent, but it's getting there. The father is now absent from the black family, and that was not the case 50 years ago. So basically, they've traded in dad, and they've gotten a picture of Barack Obama, right? A real live father, and in exchange, they get a picture of Barack Obama on TV, or a who's that guy? Kanye West. They've got Kanye West records. Okay. So their new role models are, you know, Kanye West. Barack Obama would be a better role model than a lot of these others, but still, you don't have the father. You don't have, you no longer have the shopkeepers. Maybe you still have some barber shops here and there, but you don't have the greengrocer that you would have had before. The black commercial class, which existed in the early and mid 20th century does not exist anymore. And these are a result of the social policies. You know, we usually on this show, we focus more on the plight of the white population. And so that's very, very real. These are the things that have been happening. And as a result of multiculturalism, and when you think of the massive increase in immigration, you know, the white birth rate has been so low that the white population has stagnated and is probably falling. The black population isn't falling. In fact, it is keeping up as a percentage of the population. Their percentage is rising even in the face of this immigration. But you've had them overtaken as the main ethnic minority or racial minority by Hispanics, who, you know, blacks have risen from maybe 10% of the population in the early 20th century up to about 13 or so now. Hispanics who would have been relatively negligible. There were Mexicans who were left over in Colorado and Texas and the Southwest from the time of the Spanish-American War, because those areas were lightly settled and there was no expulsion of the people once those areas were annexed. So those people who were living there, whether they were Hispanics or whether they were Indians, remained there. There wasn't any shift, you know, expulsion of the population. But the Mexican Americans made up no more than 1 or 2% of the population, and other Hispanic groups were insignificant. If you were to go back to 1960 or 1950, and now they're 16-17% of the population and the fastest growing segment of it. And then plus you have all these other groups that you didn't have in large numbers before, Southeast Asians and other Asians and Indians and Middle Easterners. Who is it helping? Well, you know, it's helping the people who come here, but what existing Americans does it help? I mean, even recent immigrants would be better off to shut off immigration, except that many recent immigrants are trying to import their own relatives. But if you're not trying to import your own relative, there's no logic for increased immigration unless you are simply trying to displace the white population and take over the country for yourself. All right, we are getting ready for our first break. I will be taking calls. The number is 1-800-31.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I don't have any callers yet. The number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And I'm going to take the next few minutes to replay a little bit of the John Batchelor show from last night, because on Tuesday nights, John Batchelor has as his guest, usually, Stephen F. Cohen in the I guess it's the last hour, or the next to the last hour of the show, what would be 10 to 11 p.m. Eastern New York time. And he has on Professor Cohen. And yesterday there's usually something interesting. And one thing that was interesting was to hear Stephen F. Cohen talk about the Jewish oligarch Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was expelled, basically, he was imprisoned and then expelled from Russia by Putin. To hear him talk about Khodorkovsky and then also about the Russia having been taken over by a mafia. Now, he doesn't describe it as a Jewish mafia, but in his books, he has named the names, and they are Jewish names. And he has pointed out from time to time the Jewish nature of some of these people. He once, in an interview, when he was asked about the prospect of Khodorkovsky running for president, he scoffed and said, as if the Russians are really going to elect a Jewish oligarch as their president. And he describes Putin as having been the person who saved Russia from rule by oligarchs. So I'm going to play this right now, and we'll go to Jeremy afterwards, because I think he's probably got something interesting to contribute. But we're going to play this first.
It's the nature of those sanctions. Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was jailed for many years by Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin for what was said to be income tax invasion and chicanery with regard to the very large Russian energy company that he ran for some years. Mikhail Khodorkovsky has written in these last days an article for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which I brought to your attention when it was published, and you responded in kind, so I would like to draw you out on these remarks tonight. However, Khodorkovsky writes that the real enemy is not the Russian people, not even the Russian apparatus. It's 100 Russians whom he identifies as key beneficiaries of the Putin regime. He says they come mostly from the criminal underworld of St. Petersburg. He says that that group is driving the new Cold War and the aggression in Ukraine and Syria and all the bad acting along the Russian frontier. He calls them a band of criminals, and that their policies are not to strengthen Russia, not to build buffer states, not to reclaim Ukraine or parts of Ukraine in order to assure the Black Sea Fleet. No, he says their goal is to, quote, steal money and avoid accountability by holding on to power. He says they have a worldwide net that they're operating in, not just in one city, Petersburg, or not just in one country, Russia. So there we have it. The President of the United States, through his spokesman, the ambassador to the Russia, says that he wants better relations with Russia and with Putin personally. And Khodorkovsky, who is now president of the Open Society and writing for the Wall Street Journal, says that what Russia is today is in the hands of a criminal regime. Good evening to you, Professor.
And I'm just going to interject for a second. I think John Bassler misspoke. Khodorkovsky is not president of the Open Society. That would be George Soros. Khodorkovsky is the head of Open Russia. Now, there may well be links, but I'm going to let Professor Cohen continue, or Professor Cohen speak.
So I have two only semi-ironic responses to both statements. Ambassador Huntsman had to go about as far as you can go from Washington, D.C. to Vladivostok to say that Trump wants detente. That's a pretty remarkable statement. I assume he was acting on instructions. So you got to hand it to Trump. He's not letting go of the idea, but Huntsman didn't exactly make the statement in Washington or even in Moscow. The Khodorkovsky thing is somewhere between self-parody and just plain silly. If there was ever a mafia state in Russia, and there isn't today, and if there isn't today, it's because Putin ended it after he came to power in 2000. But if you say at one point there was something approaching a mafia state, that is when a group of powerful men were plundering the state and the people illegally and doing it without regard for the rule of law, even with murders, tough tactics. If that was the case, Khodorkovsky, the man who is deploring the mafia state in the Wall Street Journal, was probably number one among those men in the 1990s. So I don't know how he could write such a thing, because he incriminates himself. But it's all part of this criminalizing of Russia that's coming from all quarters. What strikes me, John, is how different this is from what appeared in mainstream politics and media during the last Cold War, certainly when I encountered it fully.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on break. We will be back after the break, and I'm going to talk to Jeremy from Kentucky about this.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech. Quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Jeremy from Kentucky. Are you there?
I'm here. How are you doing today, Doctor?
I'm doing fine. Welcome to the show. Did you hear this segment that I played from the John Batchelor Show with Stephen F. Cohen?
I did hear that. I was calling in, too, to comment on how popular culture and television shows have an effect on race relations.
Okay, well, let's talk
about
that.
Oh, yeah, but while I was on hold, I did hear that, and that made me think of our ongoing discussion of Jewish power and how it shifts in Jewish power in Russia. So, yeah, I did want to comment on the popular culture thing, but I wanted to talk to you about an article that I just found, and as you noticed, I found your live chat on nationalbugle.com, and I put that article on there.
Okay.
Maybe if you want to pull that up here in a minute, we can make heads and tails out of it.
Okay. While I pull it up, why don't you talk about the popular culture on TV?
Yeah, you know, when I was a young boy in the 80s, my dad loved the TV show Sanford and Son. Mm-hmm. And I got to watch a lot of reruns because we got cable vision and we had the superstation TBS where every 45 yes. minutes you get CNN, headline news, bring back memories.
So, oh, yes.
You know, Sanford and Son played on there. And I guess that was a show predominantly in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was from a pro-white family. We were mostly implicitly pro-white, but at times we were very explicitly pro-white. But I really got my first taste of race and race relations on Sanford and Son. And one of the episodes I remember distinctively was Lamont basically joined this black nationalist group, or it's a group that would get in touch with your black roots. And he mm-hmm. changed his name to Columba. Kalunda, mm-hmm. that's what it was. You remember mm-hmm. that one?
No, I don't.
And I just thought it was interesting. Yeah,
I think Sanford and Son was on during Boy Scout night. I was off at Boy Scout meetings and usually missed most of the shows.
Really? Because I pictured you as a hippie protester back in those days.
I was a hippie okay. protester and a Boy Scout. And just as an aside, my Boy Scout troop had been invited to Nixon's inauguration. And my brother and mother were going to be protesting against the inauguration, against Nixon, you know, as part of a anti-Vietnam demonstration. And I really wanted to go with my mother and brother, But it was such an honor for our Boy Scout troop to be invited to the inauguration. So, no, I actually participated in Nixon's inauguration. But, okay, back to your story.
That's fascinating. I mean, it's maybe at a conference sometime you can tell me some more stories because that's very interesting. But, well, what I noticed, you know, is that even as a young boy, I picked this up that, you know, Fred Sanford, he didn't let anybody go. He gave it to the dumb white cop. He gave it to the obnoxious Puerto Rican neighbor that played his music too loud and let his goat loose over there. He gave it to the Jew. One time they had a Jewish neighbor, and they thought they accidentally shot him in one episode. I think it was Goldstein, actually. And then he gave it to, you know, the typical black, which was Rollo, was typified as stereotypical, you know, stealing, smoking pot all the time. So what I liked about Sanford is they didn't hold back. And looking back on it now, I can see that they're portraying Fred kind of as out of touch and you need to move on and let's go to the next level of race relation. But I think it was a good show. I think it's definitely worth a watch. And they got away with a lot on there, too, just like Eddie Murphy did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now, how about the Russia clip?
Yeah. So did you happen to see this headline that I posted in the chat? It says,
yeah,
Trump
so I
sanctioned...
pulled up the article.
Yeah, now, Putin's son-in-law.
Putin's son-in-law, but I believe, I'm pretty sure that it's his ex-son-in-law that, although he still has a relationship with the man, his daughter is no longer married to him. I believe they're divorced.
Yeah, but that's been recent, hasn't it been? Now, I usually call on here and I have a pretty good narrative worked up because I research these things, but I'm kind of at a loss now and I'm hoping you'll help me develop what's going on. So you're going to get to see like Jeremy in action here trying to piece these things together. Kirill Shamalov. I'm pretty sure they divorced in January just of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2018. He divorced Putin's daughter-in-law. Now, Kirill Shamalov, now he is Jewish, if I'm not mistaken, son of Nikolai Shamalov.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on him, but that's my understanding.
Yeah, and it's hard to pull up any definite information on his ethnicity. Wiki's holding their cards close on that one. But they own the Roysia Bank, and which I would imagine holds a lot of Putin's money as well. But so Putin's son-in-law divorces his daughter, and now there's sanctions being put on him, and also sanctions put on other oligarchs. So, I mean, what are we looking at here? What kind of a power shift are we seeing? What do you make of it first? And then I'm going to see if I can formulate an opinion.
I don't know. These sanctions, are these these were put in place. These weren't the ones that Nikki Haley had announced but then got shot down by Trump. I guess these were slightly earlier. Were these from the beginning of this month?
Yeah, you and I discussed too. They also affected Deripaska, the aluminum magnate. Wasn't it aluminum that he controls?
I guess that's what it was. I think we looked it up at the time. Yeah, the driver of the sanctions on the American side, the driver is the this diaspora Jewish elite that we have here that supports, you know, they support the Democratic Party. They also support the neocons. They're all wrapped up together, whether it's, you know, Hillary or the Bushes. You know, these are the people who are most ardently pushing for sanctions on Russia and vilifying Putin. And there's not a whole lot of opposition to them. There's pretty much the only person in the American establishment who has, who ever says anything nice about Putin is Donald Trump. There's just not a whole lot out there, you know. So I don't know what to make of this. What I make of it is it's just this continued push by, you know, people like Victoria Nuland or Fred and Robert Kagan, that whole Kagan Nuland family, you know, the Crystals, the people who run the New York Times and CNN, this whole anti-Russia thing. I see it as kind of a manifestation of that. And, you know, you and I often talk about factionalization, factions within the Jewish world. And I didn't play the clip, but later on in the John Batchelor show from last night, John Batchelor had spent a week or two in Israel. I mean, Cohen doesn't go to Israel, but John Batchelor does. John Batchelor is very strange. And when he's on with Cohen, he sounds very reasonable. But then most of his other guests are these New York Jews, and he's super pro-Zionist when he's on with them. But at any rate, Cohen asked Batchelor, because Cohen doesn't spend time in Israel, not that I know of. He says, well, what is the attitude towards Russia in Israel? Are they doing this vilification and criminalization? And Batchelor says, no, there's none of it at all. And of course, Netanyahu and Putin will talk on the phone. So the diaspora in the United States is taking a very, very anti-Russia line. The diaspora the Israelis, not as much. Now, the Israelis aren't to be trusted, and they may have a more active and open relationship with Russians, and, you know, they'll stab them in the back whenever they want to, and I would think Putin's probably aware of that. What do you make of it?
Well, pure speculation, of course, but so you have Trump's son-in-law divorces, or I'm sorry, you have Putin's son-in-law divorces his daughter in January. You have sanctions being put on shortly thereafter that affect a lot of the oligarchs. I'm just stating some facts here. And then we also know the fact that Putin teamed up with a couple of oligarchs to put down the other oligarchs, and that I don't think that these oligarchs did that for naught. I don't think they formed an alliance with Putin for nothing. You know, they want something out of it. Now, what do they want? So my speculation is that we're seeing a shift in power. You have Mnuchin here, too, calling out these oligarchs. And the article says they actually hear even that this is not hurting Putin. It might actually help Putin if it prompts the oligarchs to pull their money out of the West and put it back in Russia. So are we seeing an alliance, some sort of an alliance here with Trump and some maybe American Jewish oligarchs in the same way that Putin had an alliance, and now they're maybe targeting the oligarchs that Putin's allied with without actually hitting him? Putin gets his daughter out of the way of the whole mess. Now, again, that's pure speculation, but it's the only thing I can make of it right now.
I mean, I have to say, I don't know. I wouldn't tend to think that's the situation. I think probably it's complicated and convoluted. And I think, like, within the United States, you've got a situation very much in flux. And I don't think you could describe Trump as being in an alliance with this group or that group if your definition of alliance is anything more than most temporary. You know, I think right now what's going on in the United States is kind of like a bar brawl, and with Trump in particular not really knowing from one moment to the next who his allies are going to be. And you know, you think of Trump the way he is too. He's probably fine with that kind of situation in a way, because you think of him and he will talk about, you know, Chris Christie was a great friend, and then all of a sudden Chris Christie during the primaries was the worst governor in America, and then as soon as he beats Chris Christie's a great guy and he's going to head his transition team. And, you know, he's like that with Ben Carson. He's like that with so many people. So who knows? It is kind of a mystery. And I know less about the inner workings of what's going on in Russia. I mean, with Russia, I mean, I feel like I have a pretty good grip on the Russian-American relationship, but politics within Russia, I have less of a grip on that.
I mean, it's from the people that I've talked to, you seem to be an authority on at least the history of that. And you and Stryker both mentioned, too, that as goes the Soviet Union, so the U.S. could follow, and you see some patterns there. you know, like the Soviet Union in the 80s and the U.S. coming in the 21st century. And I just wonder, could this be another pattern of a leader who's going to ally with oligarchs to take down other ones? Who knows? And then another thing I found interesting in the article is that Paul Manafort is connected with Putin's ex-son-in-law. And Manafort is being, targeted now. And I've mentioned before a connection between Deripaska and Christopher Steele, and how maybe that whole dossier was a setup for the leftist Jews in the U.S. But again, all speculation and very fun to talk about.
Well, you had speculated a minute ago that characterized Putin as having allied with some oligarchs in order to take down others. And you were wondering what those oligarchs were getting out of it. And that's, you know, that's one possible way of looking at it. The way I've usually described it, and I don't know which is correct, but the way I've described it is Putin put some oligarchs in prison, drove some of them out of the country, and then came to an uneasy truce with the rest, where he let them keep their fiefdoms, and in exchange they kept out of politics. I mean, that's the way I've described it. I don't know if that is more accurate than what you just said, which is that some of the oligarchs actively sided with Putin in attacking others. That would take, you know, research. I don't know if which is a better description of what happened, frankly.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to watch it all unfold.
Yeah, because I mean, in the way I describe it, you wouldn't expect the remaining oligarchs to get anything special out of it other than keeping their fiefdoms. The way you described it, if they were actively siding and actively contributing to Putin in purging these other oligarchs, then you would expect them to get something out of it. I have the feeling, and I don't know, but I have the feeling that what Putin did in jailing some of the oligarchs and in effectively driving some of them out of the country did not require the cooperation of other oligarchs. It was something that he could do simply using state power. But, you know, it's something he could do on his own is not the same as something is saying that is something he did do on his own. So again, I have to kind of cop out and say, I don't know.
Yeah. I just wonder, you know, what would even though Putin may have had the power state wise, what would the repercussions be had he not kind of did a backdoor deal with these guys? Maybe he's avoiding some repercussions. I'm maybe overestimating their power. And, well, you know, I wonder if some people underestimate their power.
Well, I mean, if you have oligarchs who are in control of important industries, banking or media, for instance, those probably could mobilize their resources against a leader more promptly and effectively than, say, steel or energy could. Because, you know, they could be used to create immediate opposition. You know, the media could whip up opposition. Banks could finance opposition in a flash. Energy, I mean, I guess the energy people and the, you know, other industrial projects would have some money at their disposal, but not as much as finance would. So I don't know. And which oligarchs, like, Khodorkovsky was an energy. I think he was head of Gazprom. Was that it? He was an energy oligarch. It would be interesting to look into which oligarchs survived and maintained control. I would assume one or more of the banking oligarchs probably survived. Maybe that's something. Maybe that's something we'll look into during the break. If you want to, you can hang on for the next segment.
Thank you.
homeowners. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have? Do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Welcome back to the show, the National Bugle Radio. And Jeremy, are you still there?
Yes. Go ahead, Doctor.
All right. So this is the type of thing that back in the old days would have required a trip down to the library and maybe a couple of weeks of research. But with the internet, I pulled up a list from Business Insider of the 25 biggest, richest oligarchs in Russia. And I'm kind of going down the list, and they're mostly unfamiliar names, and I'm not able to say who's Jewish and who's not Jewish. But, you know, I'm looking at the number one guy, Alexei Mordashov, somebody I don't know, he doesn't look Jewish, owns a tourism company. Next guy, Listen, I don't know if he's Jewish or not, majority owner in a steel company. Next guy, natural gas company. Then nickel. There's this Norilsk Nickel, which is a big mining company, fertilizer company. So you're seeing a lot of mining and industrial companies, energy. Let's see. We're getting to this guy Usmanov, who actually looks like he could be Jewish, but I don't know. He's Gazprom, the gas company. Here's somebody who has a Jewish name, Friedman. Mikhail Friedman, who along with German or German Khan, which I assume is Jewish Cohen, and Alexei Kuzmichev, they own the Alpha Group. The Alpha Group is a big investment group. And here's where we do find some banking, telecommunications, things that might be a little bit politically where they could mobilize. But looking through the oligarchs, and it does seem largely to be, you know, mining and industry. So the next thing to do, and we don't have time to do it in this show, but would be to look at the people who got purged and what industries were they in. Did you have media? Did you have more banking? So what do you think of what I just dug up?
Fascinating, and you've given me some homework to do, and which maybe we can talk again on it when I've done some of the research. And did you see Shamalov in there anywhere?
Yes. He was number 18. Oleg Deripaska? Is that who you're talking about? Yeah, and he has some connection with Paul Manafort. And he's aluminum, power, insurance, auto companies, but aluminum, yeah. So he's up there.
Okay, well, Shamalov was the guy that married his son off to Putin's daughter.
Okay, so they had that marriage connection.
Yeah, so, and they married in 2013, they married.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot going on there. My bottom line at this point is still that that Putin in 1999 became prime minister of Russia, and within a few years, you know, he became president the next year. Within a few years, he transformed the Russian power structure from one that was completely dominated by Jewish oligarchs, who Professor Cohen described as a mafia, that were ruining the country, and he turned it around largely. So maybe not as far as we would want him to go, but a lot farther than anybody else has done for, you know, our people or our brethren in our lifetimes, I would say. Oh, hey, thanks for calling, Jeremy. And
thank you.
I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
And if I